Connection! Connection!
I'm being treated for cancer. I go to radiation therapy 5 days a week. And I think I could die anytime. Because I know I'll have the same God on the other side that I have here.
Miss Ada Lois Knott. She's struggling with a life-threatening situation and finding the courage to face it. We'll hear more from Ada Lois and others today on Connection.
Connection!
Today on Connection, you're going to hear two stories of remarkable courage. One, the courage of an individual as she battles to overcome disease and the hopelessness that it can bring. The other, the courage of an entire community as they face the catastrophe that threatened not only lives, but the very fabric of their community. You know, courage is a remarkable thing. We usually think of it as something we rise to when a situation demands it. We reach down inside us and find a strength we didn't know we had. But it really doesn't require an unusual situation to demand courage. Just think about when you climb out of bed each morning. Climb out of bed to face the thousands of little things that torment you each day. Where you find the strength to do that, I don't know. But if you stop to think about it, your courage probably comes from somewhere beyond you. Something so deep inside of you that you can't quite put a name on it. We'll be back in a moment with another courageous person, Ada Lois Knott. You're listening to Connection.
Silently the morning mist is lying on the water, captive moonlight waiting for the dawn. Softly like a baby's breath, a breeze begins to whisper, the sun is coming, quick, you must be gone. Smiling like a superstar, the morning comes in singing the promise of another sunny day. And all the flowers open up together in the sunshine. I do believe that summer's here to stay.
Rejoicing in the differences, 'cause no one just like me. Yet as different as we are, we're still the same.
Ada Lois Knott grew up in the United Methodist Church and has shared her life in service to her community and to her church. She's now retired and should be enjoying these years of leisure. But Ada Lois has become ill with a life-threatening disease. after so many years of giving, we wanted to know if her church has been able to help her. What about her friends, her minister, her faith?
I think perhaps the church has served me more than I've served the church. I feel that I've gotten a lot more than I have given. I think that a lot of my feeling of who I am and what I am had to come from the church. I've learned in recent years that you're not supposed to depend on outside influences for who you think you are and what you are. But I do. I have to. I see myself through other people in reflection, that sort of thing. And as long as I am giving, I feel like a worthwhile person.
A genuine Christian woman with vitality and charm. And then all of a sudden, the bad news comes.
I'm being treated for cancer. I go to radiation therapy 5 days a week. And exactly what my condition is, you know how doctors are. They really don't tell you too much. I know when I had the first surgery, they were just exploratory. They didn't know, or they didn't say they were going in because of cancer. And then the day afterwards, when they were talking to me, they said that they hadn't been able to get it all. They had picked up as much as they could, but it was just like BB shot, the picture I got, all through the abdominal cavity. And they couldn't get it all. So they had a plan of chemotherapy and radiation therapy mapped out for me.
But there was an ethical decision Ada Lois would have to make in choosing her own treatment. How would she respond to the alternatives offered by the physicians? How would her friends respond to her?
I had a choice, and the choice was entirely mine. I could die of uremic poisoning in a few weeks, and it wouldn't be too bad a death. You simply go into coma and then a few convulsions and then you black out and that's it. Or they could go in and see what they found inside. They could perhaps put in a plastic shunt to bring the urine from the kidney to the bladder. Or they might not be able to, and they would have to do an ostomy, which would mean I'd carry a bag on the outside of me for the rest of my life. And that I wouldn't know until I woke up which it was going to be. I thought that was really hard. I did tell him, thank you for being so honest with me. And I meant it. I would rather have him tell it to me like it was. But he'd given me the choice, really, of life and death, and I wasn't sure if I had that choice. What bothered me was I've had a good life. It's been full. I've had, just more interesting things to do and more interesting places to be and people to meet than most people do. And was I also being offered an easy death as well as an easy life? If so, if I refused to go now, was I just kicking God's gift back in his face and going out kicking and screaming and saying, I'm not ready yet? Or are you supposed to fight up and do the end and say, I will too live, even though it's going to not be as pleasant as it has been? I finished I did a chaplaincy visiting course this fall. Otherwise, thoughts like this probably would never have occurred to me. But in this chaplaincy visiting course, they taught us to look for theological implications and bases and references. And that's what I was trying to do as I solved this problem. I drew up my usual little sheet of paper and put the pros on one side and the cons on the other side and tried to figure it out. But I kept coming back to, what right did I have to choose? Was it my choice, or was the choice made and I going to go against God's will? Because things have been pretty smooth and nice so far, really. I made the choice to have the operation. And I'm not sure it was just cowardice. I really don't think it was. I think I could die any time. because I know I'll have the same God on the other side that I have here. But I belong to a very active adult Sunday school class, and when the lesson was over, we had a few minutes left. So I just told them what I've just said, that I was sick and tired of this poor Ada stuff, and that if they, I wanted them to think about me, and I wanted them, you know, to pray for me and that sort of thing, but I wanted only positive feelings and positive affirmations. I want them to, I told them that there was a battle going on in my body at the present between the normal cells and the cancer cells. And the cancer cells are big and tough, and they can multiply faster than the normal cells. So when they can, they take over. And I wanted them to act like they were cheerleaders on one side or the other, preferably on my side, and simply say, die, cancer cells, die. Or stay in there, healthy cells, and don't let them run over you like that. And I went to church this Sunday, and people just kind of looked at me out of the corners of their eyes. Nobody was talking about poor Ada this Sunday. So, but there were several friends who noticed that I seemed to be moving with difficulty Sunday, and they spoke about that, and that was all right.
Bill Killian is Miss Knott's minister at Faith United Methodist Church in Waukegan, Illinois. They talked together in her home.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, Bill, one thing that was especially helpful to me, and I'll always remember it, when I was in the hospital, I said once that I just felt so drifting. I wasn't doing anything for myself, and everything was being done for me. I didn't know where I was going or what was happening. And you thought it over, and you came back the next day, and you said, you made me think of Noah's Ark. The Ark didn't know where it was going, and it was drifting, and yet it was never out of God's care. And I'll always remember that.
You said a little bit ago that you knew you'd have the same God on the other side that you have on this side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to push you a little. How do you know that?
I guess that's just training, what I've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel secure in it.
Mm-hmm. Feels good?
Yeah. Very good.
Okay. Could we say the Lord's Prayer together?
Mm-hmm.
Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed
be thy name.
Thy
kingdom come,
thy
will
be
done,
on
earth
as
it
is
in
heaven.
Give
us this
day
our
daily bread.
It's been almost a year since the floodwaters rushed through Johnstown, Pennsylvania, taking with them almost 80 lives, countless homes, and priceless possessions. There have been several terrible floods in other parts of the country since the Johnstown flood of 77. But the voices you're about to hear, recorded almost immediately following the flood, are universal in character. They point to the same shock and bewilderment felt by people faced with sweeping tragedy. And they point to the same faith and courage that people under tremendous stress find in themselves and in others. Voices from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, July 1977.
I think people have to tell about the trauma of the night of the storm. The storm, many people have described as the end of the world. And these are people who are not particularly religious or, you know, apocalyptic. They're people who actually genuinely felt that the world was coming to an end. It was an 8-hour storm with constant thunder and lightning and heavy rain, And, you know, it must have just been an incredible experience that you can't describe.
It was an incredibly unusual evening from the beginning. As I recall, the rains began somewhere around 9 o'clock in the evening and were of such intensity that my wife and I could not really do anything. We were reluctant to have the television or anything on. We're awed by the incredible power displayed in nature. The lightning was like a broken neon light with occasional glaring flashes from the sky to the ground. The thunder, each time it crashed, it sounded as if one of the homes in the area had blown up. And the rain came down so hard. When I've seen it rain that hard before, I've been sure that it couldn't last more than 5 or 10 minutes. And we'd be sure that it would pass and it would come down even more intensely. At least 3 times during the evening, the lightning set off the church chimes, and there were chimes and hymns playing simultaneously. A somewhat eerie sound, and we spoke to one another and wondered whether that would add to the fright of people or perhaps offer some comfort and solace in the midst of an unbelievably powerful storm. The creek was overflowing. It had already poured rocks and debris into the road. A few cars stalled, the water being in places 3 to even 5 feet deep. We guess it was around 3 o'clock when the water broke loose. We had no idea where the dam was or whether or not it had broken, having just been in the area a month. But we knew something incredibly powerful had happened because of the amount of water that came suddenly and the horrible crunching sounds, which we later found to have been homes and cars and people.
The phone rang. I just heard one ding. That's what got me up. So I thought, well, I'll look out the window and see what it's like. And when I looked out and seen the water up to my porch, and I seen this car, truck, whatever it was, tumbling down with lights on, going to pass my place, I hollered at my daughter. I told her, Debbie, go get a blanket. I says, we're having a flood. Well, going up the hill, I seen flashlights at the window. We could see them. And I says, couldn't we get them out somehow? And he says, there's no way. He says, we got to get up the hill. He says, the dam didn't break yet. Well, while we were standing up there, he said, if you hear a loud boom, he says, start running. Well, he no more said that, and we heard it, and we start running. And then after we seen the water going down, why, he says, I think it's safe enough to go down the house and get into some dry clothes. So coming down the house, there were still lights in that window, but the water was up to the in the middle part of their picture window. So we sat here, I guess, 5 minutes, watching out the window to see if the water was going down, you know. So as the water just got down to my bank, to the edge of my bank, that's when their house just, we just seen it lift up, and we seen the flashlights, and it went backwards. It just collapsed backwards, and it disappeared, and the water went down. And that's when they went down. I just felt so helpless. They were wonderful people.
About 2503 lights went out. And I went out. I just had this crazy feeling, you know, that the dam might have burst. Because I heard this noise. I mean, I never heard nothing like that before in my life. I told them people, get out of the car, the dam broke. Matter of fact, that's what I heard over the radio. But I wasn't sure. But when I heard that noise, I was sure it did. And they said, oh, it did. So I jerked the doors open, and the women come out first, and the men fought. And right when we get inside the fire hall, the lights and everything went out there. And I said, let's take off upstairs. And before we get upstairs, it was up past our knees. By the time we get up the steps, and that Cadillac was right in front of the fire hall up there. It was rolling down the street. It just hit that quick. It was just rolling down the street. They just got out with it. A fraction of a second and 4 people. I knew the dam was broke, but I knew there was fire hall was pretty sturdy. But boy, as the night roared, you could see everything that was happening because the lightning and thundered all night. I seen our ambulance going. It was only 6 feet in front of my car. It went to one roll, and it actually rolled end over end down the highways, all making a terrific noise. The light was on. Clear down there, got the squash, and then it disappeared under the water. Then the next morning, well, they kept telling me, stay in the fire hall. When I looked down and seen even the back of the building was undermined, I had no intention of staying there. As soon as he broke the daylight, I went down in the truck and got a rope out of that truck. And I had all intentions of getting out of there, but the fire to clear across the walk out there, I don't know how many feet it is, but I got a stick and the rope on my shoulder. I just kept probing across to see where the holes was, so I got to the water was so swift I couldn't stand it no more. And the guys from the other side here, they held hands and come across. When I got that big rope, it took me 2 tries. I said, good Lord, give me the strength to throw that rope across. So I threw it across, and they tied along the pole there. There was big boulders and just everything about it. So we tied it along the other side down there. And the guy said, well, we're not going first. That water's too swift. It'll take us down. So I grabbed the rope. I went across first. Then after I got across there, boy, I thanked the Lord out there. So then I went back and we cut the two women across and the guys come across. We started walking up the road and I just couldn't believe it. All the houses out and nobody around, the people all gone and poles down. It was just, for days I expected my wife to shake me and say, wake up, I had a bad dream, but it was no dream. And the first morning we started finding bodies here, there, oh Lord. I don't want to talk about that. I just thank God I'm alive. They said they could never understand how I kept that fire hole together. We just praying all the time. I just even hate to talk about it. It's a good thing to forget about. I'll tell you one thing. I'll just never forget God and all that I live.
We are taking a step at a time in faith. And we are aware of the presence of God and of the prayers of many others because we're operating on a strength that's not our own. Our faith is a very authentic faith. And that includes for both crucifixion and resurrection. There's no cheap triumphalism. Hey, let's go on as if nothing ever happened. God has triumphed. Fa-la-la-la-la. Nor is there a defeatist attitude. We are beaten, broken, deserted, crucified, and left. There is a sense of both. Perhaps what we're in now is the Saturday of the weekend between Good Friday and Easter Sunday, somewhere in between the crucifixion and the resurrection. This experience of death very much with us, and yet the beginnings of the sound of the stone rolling away, and a belief that that will indeed happen.
Well, I've never been more impressed. I've always tried to take all the offerings the bishop asked me to take and have a good offering and try to help someone in trouble. But it's a different approach when you see it happening, you know, on the other end. And I've been simply overwhelmed. The personal calls I've had, the hundreds of dollars that have been sent from people that I do not know, in the thousands, I'm sure, of wanting to know if this would be used for some particular purpose or to help a family. I've just managed so far simply to acknowledge the gifts. These letters are priceless, and people take time out to write. In my particular case, of course, what Franklin Street meant to them, and how they had experienced the 1936 flood, or for some personal reason why they just want to share. One of the members of our church that lost her home completely and knew what it was to have her home go, and she go with the home, and she lost her father. But she and her daughter were together, and they got separated in the water. And then, of course, they both thought that the other was lost and for them to be reunited. And yet to see her, and the first thing she wanted to do was, I said, I'm glad to see you, and I shake her hand like a minister would normally do, I guess, and she put her arms around me and said, this is no time, you know, for something like that. at that particular moment, she was grateful for life.
It is so easy to forget when the news media does not constantly bring up the subject. But I would simply say, don't forget us. Continue to pray for us.
The people of the United Methodist Church, through their various boards and agencies, have provided the people of Johnstown with almost $500,000 in relief funds, over 3,000 volunteer workers, and tons of food and other essential items. But perhaps most importantly, the church has provided unquantifiable spiritual comfort. In the comfort of God's care, we can find the courage to face great trials and the courage to face everyday living. This is Connection. If you've listened with us before, you know that we invite your participation in this experience of talking, so to speak, to one another over the airways. You notice I said experience. I chose that word carefully because this is not really a program, a package made up somewhere and delivered impersonally to you. The radio is only a vehicle, a way of sharing the faith and concerns of others with you. And so you're just as much a part of this experience as the people you hear, just as much a part of the experience as we are, the people who work with tape recorder and typewriter to bring you this experience. So we welcome your letters. I'd like to read part of one letter, because to me it sort of shows the continuous process in which the community of spirits supports one another. The letter is from Melanie Post, a church and community worker in southern West Virginia. She writes, "I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your program, United Methodist Connection. Sometimes it feels like you give and give until you're drained. But I can honestly say that your program fills me back up again. It makes me proud to be a United Methodist. The ministry of United Methodist Connection has truly blessed me. I pray that it is also a blessing to many others. God be with you as you continue His fine work." God be with you, Melanie. God be with us all. Connection is brought to you each week at this time by the United Methodist Church. If you have any suggestions or comments, please write to us at Connection, Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202. That's Connection, Post Office Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202. I'm Bill Richards. Connection.